From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 30th day of September, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And Dave Dickey, of course, will be along with all the agricultural news for the day. In 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And I'll tell you why you should take a nap during my program. You know it already. It's a busy time of the season if you're a farmer. And you need all the rest you can get, this is a good time to shut down the machine and close your eyes for just a bit. Take a little afternoon rest if you get the opportunity. In the second half hour of the program today, the Harvest Hour edition, Gary Schnitke returns. He talked with us last week about production costs on the farm. This week, we'll take up farm leases. It all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, that's public radio, from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on a Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this in the wheat pit nearby December contract, $6.80, 12 cents higher for the soft red winter wheat. The March futures at 7.01 1/4, up 12 and a quarter, and May at 7.16 1/4, 12 and 3/4 higher. December corn futures, $4.87 1/2, down 25 and a half cents. The March at 5.06 1/2, 24 and a half lower, and the May at 5.18 1/2, down 24. July corn, 23 cents lower at 5.29 1/2. November soybeans, $10.45, down 49 cents. January futures at 10.62 1/4, down 48 1/4. And the March beans, $10.77 1/2, down 46 3/4. May futures, $10.89 3/4, down 47 1/4 on the day. October bean meal futures at $2.79.40, down $16.30. October bean oil at $44 even, down 70 cents. October live cattle futures this afternoon trading at $98.90, their last trade 85 cents higher. December futures up 50 at $100.37 1/2. October feeder cattle 104 even, $1.20 higher. November feeders at 103.72 1/2, up $1.15. October lean hog futures $68.57 1/2, 2.5 cents higher, and the December futures lost, down 85 cents today, finished at $64.20 a hundredweight. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like on this Tuesday afternoon. At this hour, November crude oil futures at $100.25 a barrel, trading $3.88 higher. December at $97.80, $1.71 higher. October ethanol, $2.18 1/2, just about 1 1/2 cents higher. November natural gas at $7.45, up 22 9/10. The RBOB gasoline at $2.47 4/10, 7 7/10 higher. And the October heating oil, trading at $2.86 6/10, is up 10 6/10 of a cent. October propane futures, 10 1/2 cents lower at $1.43 for the afternoon. October gold trading $874.20 an ounce, down $14 for the day. November down $14 as well at $877.30 on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 382 points. Higher at 10,747. The U.S. dollar trading at 79.41. That's up 1.69 on the afternoon. And the CRB index at 345 is 178 higher. The Goldman Sachs at 623.03, up 16.37. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own Ed Kieser. He says in northern and eastern Indiana, mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers. Elsewhere, partly cloudy to clear. Lows will range from 41 in northwestern Illinois to 50 near Lake Michigan. Tomorrow in northern and eastern Indiana, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Highs will range tomorrow from 58 in the north to 72 in the far southern parts of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. We're joined to take a look at the agricultural futures markets by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Hi, Wayne.
Todd, we seem to be having some technical difficulties. I'm having trouble hearing you.
Oh, okay. Well, let me see if I can't figure out just exactly why that is the case, and we'll keep moving forward. Any better at the moment? Probably not. So,
okay, well, just go ahead, and if I don't answer the right question, you can laugh at me.
How about that? All right, I will do that, and I'll yell at you along the way just a bit. So why don't you start off by with these numbers that came out from USDA this morning and go through the grain stocks figures for me, please?
Well, you know, of course, this morning we saw quite a shocker out of the bean stocks. Of course, the average guess was 144, and it came in 205. You know, and then we look where they added in for the production from last year. You know, ticked us up about 91 million bushels on supposedly acres we'd missed and some things like that. And, of course, that was very heavy across the bean pit. And the corn wasn't down near as hard early this morning. The stocks numbers are a little higher than expected, implying not as much usage or lower usage the last 3 months on the corn for feed and residual that way, but still within that. And it was the beans that pulled everything down as we went on down through the day. So, you know, the 91 million bushels above the previous estimate for last year's production was really, you know, a sort of a very big number to us that we looked at that way. You know, one of the things we looked at today also that changed the markets quite a bit, Todd, except those other just regarding those numbers, was the unwinding of the corn wheat and unwinding the bean wheat spreads. And, you know, as we look down at the tremendous losses in the corn and the beans, and we see wheat higher in the day, we were questioning until we saw what was happening in the spread pits.
And if you were to look out at the Dow Jones Industrial Average now, were you pleased with what happened with that after the big 700-point drop yesterday?
Well, you'd have to be happy. I mean, I guess there's optimism in the idea that we feel that there will be something worked out when they come back on Thursday and Friday is to re-vote on this, how should we say, they don't want to call it a bailout program now because that really has the public infuriated, but maybe a stabilization of the credit system, however you want to put it that way. We feel that something can be worked out and hopefully will. But the stock market's responding quite well. And look at the U.S. dollar, Todd, up 183, you know, $1.83 here. We're at 79.36 right now. That's a lot higher than I thought it would be. You know, I apologize to the listening audience this morning because we've been talking about, we've thought the printing of $700 billion and adding to the M1 and the M2 supplies was going to be inflationary. And the way the commodities have acted over the last couple of days, that's not how they're reacting in the world right now, is inflationary. So, you know, I guess our initial reaction to that was a little bit opposite to what we were taught in good old Econ 108.
Well, I have a second question behind that with the dollar then, because if we've got a stronger dollar at this moment, we had some big numbers out of the grain stocks report at 205. I think that's right for the soybeans.
Yes, 205.
205 for the soybeans. Can you expect the exports to continue to fall off then?
Well, you know, that's one of the things I guess that we were going to bring out today is if we take a look at spot corn and bean futures and weigh them on U.S. dollars, basis the cost back to the importer, we're at $3.90 on corn and $8.30 on beans, which we consider to be somewhat reasonable and suspect this could actually stir up a little better export business down the road that way. You know, we are running into some problems now. We've seen some headlines about how some of the shipping companies are having some credit problems and problems securing their fuel because of lines of credit and things along these lines. But when it's all said and done here, you know, our dollar at under 80 cents does make things a little cheaper. We have set back big amounts, you know, and we've taken $2 off the beans, and we have really moved back into what we could have to say should be the area that should stimulate buying to come on.
Wayne, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on a Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Dave Dickey is here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, officials at the U.S. Export-Import Bank are receiving numerous inquiries about its loan guarantee programs in the wake of the financial mess on Wall Street. Until the recent lending crisis, the private sector had been the source of about $1 trillion in annual lending in support of U.S. exports. Some are worried that short-term credit to finance U.S. exports will be in jeopardy. Meanwhile, lawmakers today signaled their intention of another vote of a Wall Street relief package later this week after the House failed to pass a $700 billion bailout plan yesterday. U.S. President George Bush today offered assurances that the current political deadlock would be resolved. The House is not due to meet again until Thursday. This year's budget deficit is officially estimated to be around $400 billion, but in reality, it is closer to $600 billion because of money borrowed from the Social Security Trust Fund. The Congressional Budget Office now estimates the national debt will rise from $9 trillion today to $11.5 trillion by 2013. Even if the Bush administration tax cuts expire, and if the Treasury begins taking in more revenue. A bipartisan group of senators, including Senate Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Saxby Chambliss, has sent a letter to USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer to urge the quick publication of rules and regulations pertaining to new adjusted gross income and payment limit reforms. The senators say producers need time to review the rules before sign-up for the 2009 crop year begins. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In the second half hour of our program today on most of these radio stations during the harvest hour, we'll be joined again by Gary Schnitke. He's Farm Management Specialist at the U of I. Last week, we talked about production costs for corn and soybeans. This week, we'll talk about a different type of cost, land leases. That's during the second half hour of this program today, right here on most of these radio stations. Yesterday, USDA released its crop weather report. This is the way the numbers came out. For corn, 96% of the acreage has reached or exceeded the vent stage by the week's end. That's Sunday. 3 points behind last year and 2 points behind the five-year rolling average. Meanwhile, 52% of the corn acreage developed to maturity by the week's end, 36 points behind last year and 27 points behind the five-year average. Acreage in the central corn belt was lagging between 30 and 40 points behind in most states. 9% of the crop was harvested, 20 points behind last year, 12 points behind the five-year average. Major delays were evident in Illinois and Kansas, where harvest was 28 points behind, and in Missouri, where harvest was 43 points behind the five-year rolling harvest average pace. Condition of the crop rated 61% good to excellent. That was a 2-point improvement from the previous week's rating for the corn. On the soybean side, leaf dropping occurring across 68% of the acreage nationwide. That's 16 points behind last year, 13 points behind the five-year average. Development to the leaf dropping stage advanced 24 points still during the week, with most of that progress shown in Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wisconsin. Producers had harvested 9% of the soybean acres by Sunday, 15 points behind last year and 12 points behind the five-year average. Harvest delayed in all states except Ohio, where harvest is 1 point ahead of average. Soybean condition was rated 57% good to excellent. That's unchanged from last week. For winter wheat, 42% of the acreage has now been sown. That's 4 points ahead of last year's planting pace, but 3 points behind the five-year rolling average. A quarter of the acreage or more was planted in Kansas and Nebraska during the last week. 14% of the winter wheat crop has now emerged.
This is Greg Tayson, director from USDA's Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending September 28, 2008. corn and soybean harvests progress toward maturity as the second consecutive week of warm weather promoted ripening. Harvests expanded in all areas of the state, supported by the mostly dry weather. The soybean harvest quickly accelerated across the northern one-third of the state, especially over the weekend. Corn harvest was limited by high moisture tests, and silage harvest is complete in most areas, but seed corn harvest and hay baling continued. 93% of the corn has reached the dense stage, 6 percentage points behind last year and the 5-year average. Corn mature advanced to 45%, less than one-half of last year's 92% pace and 2 weeks behind the 5-year average. 2% is harvested compared with 11% last year and the 5-year average of 9%. Moisture content of corn in the field is estimated at 32%, while harvested corn is averaging 28% moisture. Corn lodging and ear droppage is not a major concern at this time, with over 80% of the crop reporting no lodging or ear droppage. Overall, the corn crop is rated 62% good to excellent. Soybeans dropping leaves advanced to 70%, 8 days later than last year in the 5-year average. 80% of the soybean acres have been harvested, compared with 28% last year and the 5-year average of 25%. As with corn, soybean lodging and shattering is not a major concern. Only 15% of the soybean crop is showing light amounts of lodging, and 13% of the crop is showing light shattering. Overall, the soybean crop is rated 60% good to excellent, up 2 percentage points from last week. The third cutting of alfalfa progressed to 90% complete, 9 percentage points behind last year and the 5-year average.
This is Greg Tayson, director from USDA's Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending September 28, 2008.
This is Brad Schwab reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending September 28th. A sunny week with temperatures averaging almost 8 degrees above normal and virtually no rainfall were a welcome sight, creating near ideal conditions for advancing the state's delayed corn and soybean crops towards maturity. Growing degree days since May 1 at 2,938, staged somewhat of a comeback as a result of the above-normal temperatures and are now being reported only 117 units behind the historic average, an improvement of 53 units compared to last week's reported deficit of 170. The corn crop was reported 52% mature compared to 98% 1 year ago and 92% for the 5-year average. Harvest progress came in at 4% complete, compared to last year's 56% and the 32% 5-year average. Corn finished the week being rated in mostly good condition. The soybean crop reported shedding leaves on 57% of the state's acreage, compared with 94% 1 year ago and 84% normally. 6% of the crop had been harvested by week's end, compared to last year's 37% and 25% for the 5-year average. Soybeans were rated in fair to mostly good condition. In other crops around the state, 40% of the sorghum crop was reported mature compared to 81% normally, and 4% of the soft red winter wheat crop had been seeded by September 28th, with 2% reported emerged. This has been Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Becky Summer of the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service Nebraska Field Office with the Crop Weather Report for the week ending September 28, 2008. Temperatures averaged 9 degrees above normal across the state, pushing crops towards maturity and lowering moisture levels. Overall, three-quarters of the corn rated good or excellent, which is below last year's crop rating at this time. Nearly the entire crop is dented, but corn mature is 10 days behind normal. A few fields have been harvested. Soybeans are nearly done turning color and are dropping leaves with a few fields being harvested. Crop conditions are well below year-ago levels. The alfalfa acreage continues to be rated mostly good or excellent, and fourth cutting is more than halfway complete. Pastures and range conditions continue to rate mostly good or excellent but are below last year's levels. Proso millet harvested reached the halfway point and dry bean harvest was active in the west. Winter wheat seeding is nearly three-quarters complete and starting to emerge. This is Becky Summer of the USDA NAS, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
Hello, this is Greg Matley, Deputy Director of the USDA NAS, Indiana Field Office, and this is the Crop Weather Report for week ending September 28th. Near perfect weather and field conditions allowed several early maturing corn and soybean fields to be harvested during the week. Many fields of corn and soybeans were damaged by the strong winds from Mike, and farmers are having to make tough decisions on whether to harvest these fields early with high moisture levels. Fall tillage, baling of hay, and seeding of winter wheat also made good progress. Corn condition declined slightly from last week and is rated 52% good to excellent compared to 50% last year at this time. 57% of the corn acreage is now mature compared with 85% last year and 76% for the 5-year average. 8% of the corn acreage has been harvested compared with 28% last year and 16% for the 5-year average. Moisture content of harvested corn is averaging about 24%. Soybean condition is rated 48% good to excellent compared to 46% last year at this time. 80% of the soybean acreage is shedding leaves compared with 87% last year and 82% for the 5-year average. 15% of the soybean acreage has been harvested compared with 22% last year and 18% for the 5-year average. Moisture content of harvested soybeans is averaging about 13%. 5% of the 2009 winter wheat acreage has been planted compared with 10% last year and 8% for the 5-year average. 79% of the tobacco acreage is reported to be harvested at this time compared with 77% last year and 79% for the 5-year average. This is Greg Matley reporting.
Our thanks go out to the statisticians in Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, and Nebraska for helping us out this week, taking a look at conditions in their regions. Now, up next, harvest is really beginning to get into the swing of things, and you'll start hearing me say this on a regular basis, but you probably ought to know why. I think during this program, which you can hear after the fact anytime you'd like on the website at willag.org, you, if you're out in the field, should shut off the engine and maybe take a little nap. Those of us that work a regular job expect a coffee break in the morning and the afternoon. There's a good reason why. Research shows it makes us more productive and more alert. The same research can be applied to farmers and farm workers, as University of Illinois Extension Farm Safety Specialist Baba Heron.
Yeah, it's important. Research shows us that every 2 to 2.5 hours of continuous work, even if that's operating a combine or tractor, we should stop for 10 or 15 minutes to take a break. What that does is it relieves us of the stress and focus of what we're doing, even if it might be kind of monotonous at times. And it makes when we go back, we're more mentally alert, less mentally fatigued, and much less likely to make a mistake that results in injuries. And our data shows that we have big peaks in injuries mid-morning and late afternoon after people have been working continuous hours and not stopping for any, for a little break.
Heron says much of the time it's important for others around the farm to remind workers to take a little break and to shut down the machinery. A little mid-morning snack, a little afternoon nap might just be a good thing.
At least a snack would be good. A nap would be nice. I know a lot of farmers, that might be challenging for them. But even if they went and ate lunch and slept for 15 or 20 minutes, it amazingly increases our alertness and dramatically decreases having an accident. If we have an accident, it's, an average accident, and our estimate cost us about $25,000 to $30,000 in medical costs, downtime, lost productivity, those sorts of things. And if it's a fatality, it goes up to over $1 million. You look at lost productivity and those sorts of issues, as well as the direct cost of the death itself. And so it's important in managing risk that we understand how to manage ourselves to minimize those risks.
The message is clear and simple for the harvest season. Operator downtime pays because there are fewer errors, injuries, and even deaths when a body is well rested. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Two University of Illinois economists say it's important for Congress to pass some kind of plan to stabilize the financial markets when they next convene later this week. Fred Gertz says he's confident that some deal will be struck, but he says Washington should now concentrate on taking immediate action instead of investigating the causes of the crisis. Fellow economist Ann Villamil says the goal is to get banks lending to one another again by getting billions of dollars in bad mortgage loans off their books and reducing what she calls counterparty risk. A tentative agreement may be in place between current and former Urbana school employees and the student of a former teacher there who's now imprisoned on sex abuse charges. The attorney who filed the lawsuit on behalf of the student and her parent says the parties have until late November to agree on an amount, but no numbers have been released now. John White is serving a 60-year prison term for incidents that occurred at both the Urbana and Normal school districts. Illinois Treasurer Alexi Giannoulias says it's time to reform a state fund that helps cover legal expenses in death penalty cases. Giannoulias wants to limit how much money attorneys and investigators bill the Capital Litigation Trust Fund for food, travel, and hotels. He says the fund has been used as a blank check by some of those working on Illinois death penalty cases. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch reported Sunday that the fund was prone to questionable charges. In one case, the fund was billed $300 an hour by someone for merely driving to a trial. Judges are responsible for reviewing and approving expenses, and there are no regulations limiting how much can be spent on each trial. Attorney General Lisa Madigan is accusing a Pennsylvania company of running a mortgage rescue fraud scheme. She filed a suit today against AeroWorks LLC, alleging the company falsely promised to help consumers who have fallen behind on their mortgage payments save their homes from foreclosure. Republican congressional candidate Martin Ozinga III denies that there was any ethical violation in connection with a $10,000 donation he made to Democratic Governor Rod Blagojevich. Ozinga says it was donated so he and others could meet with the governor to discuss state projects. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is director. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined to take a look at the agricultural weather by Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Got cold here.
Yeah, definitely a little hint of fall in the air without a doubt, but hey, last day of September, heading into October, the days are really numbered before it really gets fall-like, but we really have some nice weather here coming over the next few days.
Tell me about it, please.
Well, high pressure is going to be in control for the most part until we get ourselves into the tail end of the weekend and early next week. There's going to be one system coming in out of the Rockies and the northern plains states that will bring some showers and thunderstorms, mainly to the northern and western Corn Belt areas, late this weekend and into early next week. And we are also going to be looking at some cool air with that system, but nothing terribly cold. A larger system with maybe a little bit more in the way of cooler air with it will be something we'll need to watch right around the 10th of an 11th of October. That'll be a system that bears watching.
And then if you look out in the hard red winter wheat growing regions, they're staying on time for planting. Actually, pace is pretty good at this point. They're going to be slowed down any time in the next week and a half?
I don't think so. While there's going to be some shower chances, I don't think it's going to be enough to cause any real wet ground. The showers will move through quickly as the systems will be moving through rather quickly as well.
Turn your attention to South America. Tell me how they're preparing for planting progress, at least weather-wise.
Well, weather-wise, across most of Brazil and most of Argentina, chances of shower activity looking pretty good. So some early spring moisture on the way for those growing areas, which might slow things down a little bit, but the moisture is not excessive.
Any place around the planet we need to keep track on other than South America?
Well, in Australia, chances of moisture actually not bad in some areas. As maybe, hopefully, I know for folks down there, they could use some moisture in this, hoping for a better spring and summer, and it's off to a little bit of a better start than the last couple of years.
And finally, if you could round out maybe with Ukraine and India and a couple of those points that continue to raise wheat year in and year out.
Well, in India, they're continuing to get some moisture. Monsoon season hanging on there. Looks like many areas of India are going to be looking at above normal precipitation. So they'll be kind of wet there. If we go over to Europe, look at the Ukraine. Well, most of Europe looking at some near to above normal chances of moisture. In fact, many areas of Europe, Central, East, West, all look wet and cool and a bit unsettled.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. If you'd like to hear what Don Day had to say, again, you can do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Time to say goodbye to a few of our listeners at this point. For the rest of you, stay with us for the next half hour. Gary Schnittke will join us, and we'll take up the topic of land leases. That in the second half hour of the Closing Market Report, we call it our Harvest Hour Edition. I'm Todd Gleason.
Programming on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at tnol.com.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. I'm your host, Todd Gleason. On the line with us to take up the financial markets this afternoon is Phil Brunson of Wachovia. Good afternoon to you, Phil.
Okay, good morning, good afternoon. The Dow and the NASDAQ continue to rally, hitting new highs in the past hour. Financial stocks are leading the rebound as the Dow recovered more than half of yesterday's deep losses. Hopes that a bank rescue package can be salvaged appear to be lifting the market today. Senate leaders are vowing to pass a plan this week. Today's improvement in stocks came in spite of evidence of credit markets are seizing up. J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Morgan Stanley all advanced more than 10%. J.P. Morgan is up at $5.22 to $46.23. Citigroup gained $3.10 to $20.85. And Morgan Stanley is up $3.40 to $24.36. Currently, the Dow is up 400 points at 10,766. Volume is at 983 million shares. NASDAQ Composite is up 92 points at 2,075. The 10-year Treasury note is down a point, and it's currently yielding 3.77%. This has been Phil Brunson with Wachovia Securities in the Mid-Afternoon Report.
Thanks much, Phil. Phil Brunson joins us here on a Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report, the Harvest Hour edition. In a moment or two, we'll talk with Gary Schnittke. He's a farm management specialist at the University of Illinois, but a couple of things up front. As I listened to some of the programming on other stations yesterday, it reminded me that watching the Dow Jones Industrial Average plummet, that's 700 points yesterday, there was an awful lot of panic in the marketplace, and I was irked, I guess, just a bit by the fact that they didn't put it in percentages and instead concentrated on just numbers. So in that vein, the percentage, I think, was down 7% in 87 on Black Monday when the largest one-day percentage loss came. It was a 22% drop. Keep that number in mind because here are some other numbers. I found the top 10 biggest losses in the stock market. The last one, number 10, and this is top 10, was in 2000, lasted 999 days to 2002, a loss of 37.8%. Back in 1916, we lost 40.1% of the market in 393 days for number 9. Number 8 was in 959 days in the year 1939, a 40.4% loss, the 7th worst stock market crash in 1973. That's kind of an interesting year. We might think about that as the marketplace, at least the agricultural marketplace, looks a little bit like 1973 at this point, down 45.1%. That one lasted 694 days. The 6th worst in 1901, 875 days, and it lost 46.1%. That 40% number is a common number in these losses. The 1919 loss lasted 660 days, 46.6%. The 4th worst loss was in 1929, started in September, lasted just 71 days at 47.9%. The 3rd worst loss was in 1906, 665 days, a 48.5% loss. The 2nd worst loss was in 1937, 49.1% was the loss over 386 days. And then the 1930 loss was the biggest loss, and this lasted from 1930 to 1932. So the crash, which happened in 29, was a little different. It did rebound. Then we went back into a loss from 1930 to 1932, and this one was the devastating, and why they call it the Depression. We had a 40% loss on most of the rest of them, 86% the loss from the top to the bottom in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Started on April the 17th of 1930, ended on July the 8th of 1932. 86% loss over that time frame from a Dow Jones Industrial Average number of 294 to an ending Dow Jones Industrial Average at the bottom, at least, of 41 points. So it was a huge loss. Speaking of which, that loss took a recovery time frame of 22 years. So it wasn't until 22 years later that it managed to come back up above the stock market crash of 29 and 30. It didn't manage to rebound for 22 years, so it took a very long time. Given that, Let's talk about land leases. I don't know whether I like to put those two together or not, but we'll do that at this point. Gary Schnittke is with us. He's a farm management specialist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He was on the air with us last week to talk about crop production numbers, and this week we'll talk about another input side, I suppose, a different kind of input. But land is an input of sorts, and leases will be due to be signed in Illinois and across the Midwest yet this fall. Thanks, Gary, for coming back over today.
Thank you for having me, and I don't think we're going to see a cash rent decline like those this year at the very least.
not at 46% or at 86%. But tell me about leases and cash rents and what you do see at this point.
Well, obviously, we're in the middle of cash rent renewal season for the 2009 crop year. Right now, and we hear a lot about cash rents actually increasing. Latest bit of evidence or evidence from the Illinois Society of Professional Farm Managers and Rural Appraisers would say that cash rents are going to increase by about $40 for the 2009 year versus 2008 for high productivity farmland.
Well, the question really is, should they increase that $40?
And actually, I would say if you're looking at the fundamentals of it, 2008 is likely to be more profitable than 2009. So you shouldn't probably be seeing cash rent increases of this magnitude. The primary driver of those lower projections for 2009 is the much higher non-land cost, the fertilizer, seeds, and chemicals. And we're looking on average probably about $180 increase on corn, close to $90 increase on soybeans. So seeing costs go up by, you know, on average blending across those crops of $120 to $130 an acre. So that on top of a cash rent increase, we're looking margins are going to get much tighter in the 2009 year versus now.
And for our non-ag listeners, what is a cash rent?
Cash rent is a payment for the use of the land. The farmer pays a non-farmer who owns the land for the use of the land. It's usually in dollars per acre, paid at the couple times often during the growing season, set before the growing season starts. It's one of the two major types of leasing in the Illinois and the nation general, cash rent, and then there's also share rent, which is sharing of both revenues and direct costs.
Now, we'll tell us a bit more about those crop share rents. How does that work?
Crop share leases in this area of the world typically have share 50% of the revenue, 50% of the seed, fertilizer, chemicals, and direct cost. Farmer provides all the equipment and labor. The landlord provides all the land. Often we see that also, that share rent arrangement with the farmer also paying a supplemental rent of about $20 an acre or $20-$25 an acre currently.
So in one form, the crop share, the landowner is sharing in the risk, and the other it's just a straight payment, just a dollar transfer.
Yep. The obvious are share rent, landlord bears the risk of market changes, cost, and in the cash rent, they don't. Having said that, the major advantage of a share rent to a landlord is that they don't have to renegotiate it every year. We've been in the process now where many landlords are asking each year what cash rent should be and trying to adjust it to the changing market conditions out there. Share rent does that automatically by sharing those revenues and those costs.
Hmm. Well, let's take up cash rents just a bit more. If you were, and you said they're negotiating each year the cash rent, is that a smart idea, or is it a smarter idea to have a longer lease time?
We would suggest having a very short lease period now of 1 year. Lease terms used to be more leasing terms of 3 years or 4 years. Now, we've seen a lot of at least professional managers back off of that, and we've also made the suggestion that you wouldn't want to do that because of the volatile price situation, the cost situations that are out there, you could sign a 3-year lease and not really, the economics of farming could change dramatically in 2010, 2011, making that lease either not supportable from the farmer standpoint or look out of line from the return standpoint. So leasing terms shorter rather than longer seems to be the wise option at this point in time.
Are there modifications of the cash rent that you like?
There's variable cash leases where you have and there's a number of ways of doing that. We see a lot of people setting a base cash rent and then varying that up or down depending on what actually cash or revenue does. So they could base it on what actually happens on the farm revenue, take the yields from the farm and also some index of prices, calculate whether that base rent should go up or down depending on what actual revenue has. There's another lease that we have suggested that at Illinois that is based on crop insurance parameters that sets the rent at the same time that farmers would know the base price for their crop insurance products.
So March the 15th?
March 15th, the lease, the cash rent terms would be set at that point in time. That, again, would vary rents based on what happens to base prices.
When did you develop that one? I don't recall that one.
That was last year.
Was that last year? And these are available on the FarmDoc website?
Yep.
Yep. Where do you find them?
There's two places. We wrote a paper on the FarmDoc website, which is in the management section, and there's a new lease farm in the law tech section. Both of those lease farms are available, actually, from the front page. If you look on the right-hand corner of the page, there's lease forms on it. So that's where you can find the lease form that implements the rental arrangement.
And if you want to get to that, it's www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu, or you could just Google FarmDoc, all one word, FARMDOC, and University of Illinois, and you'll get to that FarmDoc site, and then follow Gary's directions, and you can download those. Are those PDF files? Are there Excel spreadsheets that go along with them to plug in some numbers as well or not?
There's PDF
files of the contracts.
Files of the contract. The paper that describes that crop insurance parameter lease also has an Excel spreadsheet that you can use to compare how leases would perform under various situations. So both.
All right. Good deal. Well, we're talking with Gary Schnitke this afternoon. He's a farm management specialist at the University of Illinois, taking up cash rents and cash leases and talking about how producers and landowners can use those in the coming year and what kinds of things they should be on the lookout for. We'll allow you to join us in our conversation. We come back in just 2 minutes. Let me give you a couple of numbers you can call if you'd like. The numbers are 217-333-9455. That's 217-333-9455 or WILL. Or if you're outside of the immediate area, you can call toll-free 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455 to join our conversation this afternoon with Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist. We'll be back in 2 minutes with more from him.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the licensed professionals at Body Therapy Shop, dedicated to helping clients relieve stress-induced muscle or joint pain with therapeutic massage, body work, and physical therapy services. Located in the Lincoln Square Village, Urbana, with more information on the web at bodytherapyshop.com.
Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like this afternoon. Prepared by our own chief meteorologist here at WILL, meteorologist Ed Kieser from the University of Illinois. He says tonight in northern and eastern Indiana, it'll be mostly cloudy. A few scattered showers elsewhere, partly cloudy to clear. Lows will range from 41 in northwestern Illinois to 50 near Lake Michigan. Tomorrow in northern and eastern Indiana, mostly cloudy, scattered showers elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Highs will range from 58 in the north to 72 in the far southern part of Illinois. And then the extended forecast looks like this. Cool weather will continue on Thursday. Morning lows will be mostly in the 40s with some 30s scattered in and about. A little light frosts in some of those normally colder locations. Widespread frost is not expected, and the growing season will continue across most of Illinois and Indiana. Cold air aloft should make for a rather unstable atmosphere during the daytime hours, with cloud cover building during the heat of the afternoon. This will be especially true across northeastern Illinois and northern and central Indiana. Temps will moderate to seasonable levels to the end of this week, into the weekend, with highs in the mid-60s and the mid-70s. Dry weather expected Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. A few showers will be possible on Sunday, with a better chance of rain on Monday. Next week, we'll feature some ups and downs, says Ed, and temperatures, along with some occasional showers. No extremes are showing up on the maps next week at any time. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. Joining us in studio this afternoon is Gary Schnittke. He is the Farm Management Specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, part of the Farm Doc team. Gary, let's continue on with our conversation about cash leases and rents and all kinds of things that are related to land and opportunity. You tell me that there will be a lot of variability this year, maybe more so than in previous years with cash rents, and that's probably should be the case.
Yes, we always see a lot of variability in cash rents across farms, even of similar productivity. Just there is a lot of variability in lease terms out there. One of the things that's happened post 2006 with higher price grain prices, though, is that the fundamental underlying economics of it would say that suggests that rents for different productivity land should be much wider now than they were in 2000 prior to 2006, and the fact of the matter is that if you have a 20 different bushel difference in yield on corn from a different productivity land, $20 used to be valued at $2.40, or you know,
20 bushels at $2.40, right?
And now it's $5. So you know that translates into much higher revenue for higher productivity land, and costs really don't vary a lot or as much across different productivity lands. About the only item that varies a lot is fertilizer. The rest of them are pretty constant. It takes the same amount of seed, whether it's 150 bushel ground versus 170 bushel ground versus 200 bushel ground. So, and it goes same with seed and chemicals. But just to give you a feel here, you know, for example, 190 bushel corn land might have $280 remaining to pay for the farmer and rent. Our estimates would say that for 170 bushel ground, that would be $194, almost $100 less. And if you go down to 150 bushel land, we're getting down to $33 an acre to split between the two. And actually, with these cost increases, lower productivity farmland, the economics would say that you're probably be reducing cash rents now rather than increasing them.
And the productivity index is based on the soil profile?
Soil profile. You know, and we have a lot of land in this area where you can reasonably expect to get 190, 200 bushel corn yields for a certain soil. And in the same area, you know, it could be 170, 180. And those two types of land should have different cash rents, and those differences again have gotten wider, not narrower, since 2006 and higher commodity prices.
Have you written this up anywhere, and can we find it somewhere on the websites? Or
that will be written up soon here.
What did you think about it this afternoon?
No, we've been working on those issues actually. That's a publications we're going to release in our management newsletter. Section probably next week.
So it'll be a FEFO or?
Yeah,
it'll be
FEFO.
Yeah, so Farm Economics Facts and Opinions section of the Farm Doc website. Again, that address is www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu if you want to visit that website. Or if you can't remember that, it's pretty easy. Just hit Google and type FarmDoc, all one word. It stands actually for Farm Decision Outreach Center. And if you type University of Illinois or UIUC, which stands for University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, UIUC, you'll come up with it. Probably should be one of the first things that you're able to find when you get to that FarmDoc website. Anything else on leases that we ought to take up this afternoon that you can talk about yet?
Well, we've seen within recent years, since 2006, obviously, cash rents increasing. You know, somewhere probably maybe not in 2009, but 2010, you know, we're going to see the economic situation change such that margins are going to be much tighter in agriculture. It always happens. We hope it's a couple years out, but when that happens, hopefully we'll see cash rents also go the opposite direction from where we're seeing them go now.
And we have just a couple of minutes. Maybe we probably should close out with the Farm Income series that's coming up and promote some of that. You and I'll both be on tour in the week before. I think Christmas will be out.
Yep. We will be doing farm economic summit meetings, and there'll be several of those around the state. Well, there are day-long programs beginning at 9 o'clock in the morning and proceeding to 3 o'clock. We'll have Daryl Good talking about market outlook, Dale Latz about the farm income situation. I'll be talking about cost increases and what that does to crop rotations, or should we see more corn or less corn next year. Paul Ellinger will be talking about for the financial situation and what all of this that's happening now might mean to agriculture. Scott Irwin will be talking about marketing styles and what we should be doing with crop insurance. And we'll have a couple of other topics there, but it's all geared towards the current economic situation and should be of interest to farmers and other agriculturalists.
All right. Well, thanks much, Gary. Gary Schnitke is a farm management specialist at the University of Illinois, talking about our farm economic summits, which are coming up in the month of December, the 16th in Mount Vernon, the 17th in Bloomington, Galesburg on the 18th, and the 19th in Sycamore. We hope that you maybe can join us on those dates. Check out the FarmDoc website for complete details. Thanks for being with us here on the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Thank you.